This podcast is brought to you by Lanco Group, your business partner for engineering solutions. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Afternoons on FNR Football Nation Radio with Adriano De Monte and Rick D'Andrea.
FNR Football Nation Radio. Warm welcome if you are with us on Facebook Live and to those of you who are tuning in via our app and our website, footballnationradio.com. It's been a big week of action across Europe's top club competitions, but now we are into the full swing of Euro 2020 qualifiers. Incredible, the World Cup was yesterday and today we're into qualifying for the next major international tournament for the European nations. We've got some results from overnight, plenty of action to preview over the course of the weekend, some international friendlies as well, so a whole lot more to come on that front. Some massive news at club level, particularly at the UEFA Champions League. Cristiano Ronaldo has learned his fate with regards to that gesture in the round of 16 against Atletico Madrid. I'll let you deliver the outcome very shortly, Rick.
I will, thank you.
And, of course, we will cast our eyes over all the latest transfer news. We know every day this week there have been a number of breaking news stories on the transfer front. Some fresh stories today as well. An update on the future of Antoine Griezmann at Atletico Madrid. More news about the uncertain future of Paulo Dybala, of course, at Juventus. And Dani Alves, the reason behind his contract extension, or soon-to-be contract extension, at Paris Saint-Germain has reportedly been revealed. Find out what that is and more over the next couple of hours, of course, here on Afternoons on FNR Football Nation Radio. Get in touch at any time, Facebook Live, or via Twitter at FNR_radio.
Well, as always, don't forget, give us a call.
As always, you can call us. You steal those words in my mouth all the time, Rick. As always, you can. First hour, second hour, whenever you like. 99-99-99. And you are with myself, Adriano Del Monte, and Rick D'Andrea for the next 2 hours. Give us a call. We'd love to chat. Rick, the news headlines, including that Ronaldo verdict, I hope, and yes, plenty more, a big show in store.
Yes, good afternoon, and good afternoon to all our listeners once again. And we'll start with the UEFA 2020 European qualifiers. That were the big results and the big news of the last 24 hours, and the Netherlands have gotten off to the perfect start, defeating Belarus 4-0. Memphis Depay was the star of the show with two goals and an assist, ably supported by Gini Wijnaldum and Virgil van Dijk. Belgium also got the 3 points against Russia in their opening Group I fixture with a 3-1 win. Yuri Tielemans and an Eden Hazard double ensured the Red Devils claimed the result. However, they are not top of Group I, and you'll find out very soon as to who is and why. Croatia had to do it the hard way to beat Azerbaijan in their opening clash, with Ramil Shadayev opening the scoring before Barasic and Andrej Kramaric ensured the Vatreni kept their perfect home record intact, getting a 2-1 win there. In the other match, the other big match, of course, substitute Krzysztof Piątek ensured Poland defeated Austria 1-0 and claimed the only away win of this morning's action. In other results, Borat would be very, very pleased as Kazakhstan defeated Scotland 3-0. Cyprus, they are the ones who lead Group I with a 5-0 win over San Marino. North Macedonia claimed a 3-1 win over a 10-man Latvia. Slovakia beat Hungary 2-0, while Israel and Slovenia played out a 1-1 draw, the only scoreless, or the only stalemate this morning. Sami Khedira, in great news here, has been given the all-clear to resume training with Juventus at a high intensity. The German international was diagnosed with an irregular heartbeat requiring specialist treatment in mid-February, and now he is able to join the Bianconeri for the final part of the season. Speaking of Bianconeri, his teammate Cristiano Ronaldo has been fined €20,000 for his explicit cojones gesture against Atletico Madrid in their round of 16 Champions League second leg clash. The Portuguese star risked being banned for one match, but was handed the same punishment as Atletico boss Diego Simeone, who made the same gesture in the first leg. Leicester City players not on international duties, coach Brendan Rodgers, and members of his backroom staff have travelled to Thailand to pay their respects to former owner Vijay Shivdhanaprabha at his cremation ceremony. Vishu died in a helicopter accident, if you don't remember, exiting King Power Stadium in October. His body has been resting in a temple for 100 days in accordance with Buddhist tradition and was cremated on Thursday in a ceremony attended by the Thai king. And finally, the mother of former Cardiff striker Emiliano Sala has put pressure on the Welsh club to cede to FC Nantes' request and demand. FIFA have now also stepped in to oversee the saga, as the EPL side are still unwilling to honour their part of the agreement due to a preliminary report not satisfying all the requirements. Adrian, back to you.
Sad way to end the news there, but yeah, interesting developments with that ongoing saga, unfortunately, between Cardiff and Nantes. We brought you news the other day that FIFA were set to intervene as well. So, yeah, some difficult that the mother has now had to intervene.
Obviously. She's basically, in her words, she has said, well, you can't kind of wipe away a signature.
No.
And you can't.
So they must honour the word. The signature cannot be wiped away. It's, obviously not something that she'd want to be vocal about or worry about. She's got more on her plate at the moment. But, yeah, that situation's still nowhere near its end at this stage, unfortunately, for the clubs involved. And I suppose sad, but also nice that some of those Leicester City players who aren't on international duty were able to get over to Thailand and pay their respects on behalf of the club as well. So sad way to end the news headlines there on a night in Europe and a morning in Australia here, where there was plenty of action on the pitch and some near surprise results, some really nice performances by some nations, and obviously some developments at club level as well. So plenty to get through in the program. A number of key transfer stories that I touched on off the top, which we'll get to very, very shortly. But, well, let's start with the biggest news story, and then let's get into the Euro qualifying results, and then we can talk some more European football to close out the first hour. We'll look ahead to what's to come over the weekend. But that big, big news story overnight in the Champions League, Cristiano Ronaldo fined €20,000, the identical fine that was handed out to Diego Simeone for an identical gesture. However, there were some fears in the Juventus camp that Ronaldo would actually cop a one or maybe two match suspension by UEFA, because the difference here with the Simeone one was that the gesture was actually targeted and directed directly towards the Athletic fans. Therefore, well, reportedly, it was a little more significant than the Diego Simeone incident. If that had prevailed, though, Juve would certainly have appealed. Not to be the case, he slapped with a ban. Your thoughts in the wash-up now, given the fact that he has avoided any suspension?
It's the same thing, as I said, after the Simeone incident. The precedent was there. You could only give it one thing and one thing only. It's the exact same thing. The exact same tie as well. So there were a lot of things. Yeah, you can argue that the Ronaldo gesture was towards the Atletico Madrid fans at the time. But Simeone's as well was in the heat of the moment going up in taking that lead and all the pressure that had been given towards him at that stage. So for me, like for like, perfect result.
Yep.
Yes, we could argue why the one match ban may have been given, but it would have been too excessive by UEFA standards to go that far.
Juventus certainly would have appealed, as I said. I think it would have been absolutely ridiculous if he would have been suspended, because it was an identical set of circumstances. But what a blow that would have been for Juventus to have to go through because no guarantee they would have been successful.
Correct.
And with news just breaking overnight as well that Douglas Costa is now in serious doubt for the first leg, and with other attacking issues as well, form and other, injuries that have led to exclusions from the squad, the Juventus attack would have been very thin without Cristiano Ronaldo in the lineup there, a player who has been so successful in his previous meetings with Ajax. So it's a massive sigh of relief for the Bianconeri. I think common sense ultimately has prevailed there. And I did some maths, Rick.
Away.
2 hours of work for Ronaldo, and he'll pay that fine off. So,
not a bad little work.
A slap on the wrist, but Ronaldo, I think he should be fine for those actions there in the match. But again, common sense does prevail. Ronaldo gets off with just a fine and no ban. So big news there breaking out of Juventus. And the other news out of Juventus you mentioned in the news headlines about Sami Khedira, very pleasing as well. Another not so great story that you've included there in the headlines, but we are here to bring you the news breaking out of Europe. And good to see that Sami Khedira, who did have that irregular heartbeat condition, what, 4 weeks, 5 weeks ago?
More or less just before the first leg, maybe even a week before that period.
4 to 6 weeks ago, they're saying he's nearly
He's now fine to return to full training and get himself back into, hopefully, first-team football. Yeah. We've talked about this season in particular, the Juventus midfield and the lack of depth and how thin they are. Well, you've now gotten somebody back into that role who can help out the likes of Emre Can, Blaise Matuidi, and anybody else that Juventus want to roll through. You know, Rodrigo Bentancur, Milan Pjanic, it doesn't matter who those names are. Adding Khedira, as much as he is a teacher's pet to Massimiliano Allegri, and as soon as he is able to be given the all-clear to return to full-match playing, you'd see him back in the team, wouldn't you?
Yeah, look, you can. It's another option. But I think most importantly, before even worrying about playing on the pitch, his health
is right. His health is first, of course.
If he's right to get back to be within contention of rejoining the squad. So pleasing news there. And yes, does add some depth to that midfield, which is very thin. Only 4 fit players in the Juventus midfield. He makes 5, and that's their entire squad of midfielders. So timely return for Sami Khedira on the eve, obviously, of, well, the end, the final third of the campaign, and obviously the quarterfinals of the UEFA Champions League. So plenty more to come on the European front. A lot of transfer talk to come as well. But let's go now to the Euro 2020 qualifiers. They got underway this morning, the first round, the first day, I suppose, of Euro 2020 qualification. Exciting times, and there were some big nations in action. And I'm going to start with one of the nations, Rick, who I said yesterday would stamp their authority.
And they did.
And they did. And, well, not that you said they wouldn't, but you did say that.
I tried to pose the case for the other side.
And respectfully, I said that was ridiculous. Netherlands 4, Belarus 0. A complete display by this Dutch outfit, and not that we expected anything less, but this Dutch outfit are the real deal. Some very impressive performances on the night. Again, with all due respect, only against Belarus. But the Netherlands, who, of course, through to the UEFA Nations League semi-finals and finals, the final four there as a group winner in League A, well, their good form has continued. They're in this group, of course, with the Germans, who they'll meet at a later date. But what a way to start, a 4-0 win, and they are the real deal, as I predicted yesterday.
Well, it started off like a house on fire after only 50 seconds when Memphis Depay found the back of the net.
Very fortunate.
Very fortunate. And I think that sort of upset Belarus's rhythm. I actually watched this one pretty closely this morning on Optus Sport, and I sensed that as soon as that went in, Ronald Koeman's men, not only did they try and sit back a little bit or absorb a little bit more of the pressure that Belarus were coming at them, but then they'd counterattack very, very quickly. And you could see that when they went to 2-0 up, thanks to the Ryan Babel cross, which, of course, if I flicked on him, Gini Wijnaldum smacked into the back of the net, you could see then, okay, they wanted to ramp up. They were still hungry. They still wanted a third, a fourth, a fifth, a sixth goal.
Yep.
Belarus just couldn't quite absorb all that pressure. And they tried and tried and tried. They tried to count. They tried to press forward, but it just wasn't able enough to get past that defense of the Orange.
Again, another very impressive display by a very talented national team. It's extraordinary when you look at this team now. Well, you fast forward 7-8 months from the end of the World Cup. It's extraordinary to think that this team here missed the World Cup, but obviously this is the new generation now of Dutch football, and the fact that, well, De Jong was very solid yet again, the fact that Depay scored a double here, the fact that De Ligt and Van Dijk are clearly forming as arguably already the best defensive partnership in world football, which is extraordinary. How did they miss the FIFA World Cup?
Oh,
it's unbelievable.
That I've got no idea. I still scratch my head. Like you said, 8 months on from the World Cup, I really do struggle to work it out. You've just run through some of that lineup, and you go, that talent should supersede anything that they were able to do a year ago. They should have been, you'd probably say, in a round of 16, if not a quarter final, based on what they have on paper.
Of course, they were eliminated in their World Cup qualifying group. They were drawn in arguably the group of death in Europe with France and Sweden. And so that was always going to be difficult. We know how impressive Sweden were. That was no fluke that they overcame the Dutch national team. But the Dutch have clearly come on in leaps and bounds in the last 12 months. And you feel now they will not only be a contender at Euro 2020, they will be a serious favourite to go on and potentially win that thing. And it's been a very quick turnaround for them. And it goes to show that, obviously, a bit of fortune in multiple players coming through at the right time, but with some strong youth development, your future can turn around very, very quickly. So and this is why I was very confident that this young team would come out and really put their foot down from the get-go. And with that match against Germany to come in, I think, 72 hours' time, this team will potentially be 6 points from six, top of the table after two rounds, and could all but assure themselves of a place early on.
And they won't have any fear playing Die Mannschaft, considering they took care of them, of course, in that final match in order to get through to the semi-finals of the UEFA Nations League. Won't be scared of them at all.
Well, they obviously had that 2-2 away from home with that late goal to put them through, but two late goals to put them through. Remember, they came back from 2-0
down.
But remember the reverse.
3-0.
They destroyed Germany on home soil, and this will be on home soil again. I'm expecting a very impressive Dutch display in that match, and I'll be tipping them to win. We'll preview that match a little later on in the program, because that will headline one of many key fixtures between big nations this weekend across the Euro 2020 qualifiers. But Netherlands 4, Belarus 0. Of course, they go top of their group, along with Northern Ireland, who had a 2-0 win over Estonia. You have to feel for Northern Ireland a little bit here. Of course, Northern Ireland eliminated in the playoff round for the FIFA World Cup out of Europe. They're a solid nation who have continually been growing in recent years. You just feel they're obviously in a little difficult position here to take care of both Netherlands and Germany in this group.
But they're just on the cusp of everything.
You're exactly right. And obviously an underwhelming UEFA Nations League campaign means that Northern Ireland will be, they were relegated from that group with Bosnia and Austria, 0 points. Northern Ireland are going to be one of those unfortunate teams that, well, they're a League B team in the Nations League, Rick. They are clearly the third best nation in this group for Euro 2020 qualifying. They're going to be one of those nations who are better than some qualifiers at Euro 2020, but due to the fact that they're in League B in the Nations League, they're going to just miss out completely.
They just got that unfortunate draw in the end, haven't they?
They're stuck in no man's land in the middle, where they're not good enough to qualify out of the Nations League. They're not good enough to qualify out of their Euro 2020 group. But because their ranking was a little too strong in the Nations League and in qualification, they're going to miss out completely. So it's a shame for Northern Ireland, but I think they'll have to, despite the result this morning, I think unless they're getting some results against Germany and the Netherlands, they'll be missing out in the Euro 2020 finals.
You can only hope for their sake they win all their other games and they somehow can pluck a couple, maybe two points between those four matches against the Netherlands and Germany.
In an ideal world, they're going to need probably the Netherlands to dominate the group and then get a result against Germany is the likely outcome there. But I don't see it at this point. I think Germany will come on. We saw some positive improvements from them, obviously, against Serbia in the friendly yesterday. How will that translate into a match against the Dutch? We'll cut over that match a little later on in the program. But again, recapping those results, Netherlands 4, Belarus 0, Northern Ireland 2, Estonia 0. There was one win on the road overnight that you mentioned, Poland. Now, this match, Poland away to Austria, we said would be enormous in determining the group winner. And yes, this early on, it would be a key factor. Poland, of course, very poor in the UEFA Nations League, being relegated from their group with Portugal and Italy. But they pick up a crucial win here against the very talented Austrian outfit. And on the road, 1-0. And that man again, Piontek, scoring 10 minutes after coming off the bench. Scores for his national team again. He's been in good goal-scoring form since joining AC Milan. Started the season like a house on fire at Genoa. He's clearly one of the form strikers in world football. And, well, a timely goal for Poland. They pick up an invaluable win on the road here at Austria 1-0.
Just what's needed for the red and white. I know they're both nations are red and white, but, of course, I'm talking here about Poland. You want to try and set yourself up very early on to not only, like you said, win this group, but put yourselves into pole position going into the 2020 championships. You want to forget about what happened, of course, at the World Cup. You want to forget about what has happened during the UEFA Nations League. Setting yourself up in this position with Piontek scoring, it's a great little thing as well for Berzhikowski right now.
Yeah, really good result for Poland. They look good, and they'll be, obviously, they are, in terms of their ranking, and they've always been up there, but they look good, and obviously, given the I suppose.
And Austria did have their chances, might I point out. Daniel Alba had a couple of chances to score as well. I think Hinterberger also had one.
But this result on the road to the next best team in the group.
It just means so much.
Well, it means a lot because this is... Again, Poland are very fortunate with their draws. This is another fairly weak group. It's six-nation group, Macedonia, Slovenia, Israel, Austria, Latvia, and Poland. So this win for me, Poland are going to the Euros directly through this, despite relegation in the UEFA Nations League. And they currently are second behind Macedonia, who had a very nice 3-1 win against Latvia. No surprise there. But Macedonia with, a coming-of-age display by a couple of youngsters coming through. Elif Elmas, did you see the third goal in
this
match?
No, I haven't. No, I haven't seen any highlights of this game,
Rick,
unfortunately.
A double by the 19-year-old who plays in Turkey for Fenerbahce. This was, check out the third goal whenever you get an opportunity, outside of the boot.
Finding it right
chipped,
now.
Chipped effort, late on, Latvia were down to 10, but top corner, sensational by the 19-year-old who, as I said, is... worked himself into the Fenerbahce squad this season. So it was a very nice display by Macedonia. And Macedonia have been a nation that have caused a few shocks over the years. And maybe Macedonia could be one that could potentially, if Austria are to drop these games, well, maybe the door would be open there to a Macedonia or a Slovenia. But Slovenia, unfortunately, held to a 1-1 away to Israel. So that's not going to help either of those two nations, but the points are shared there. So Macedonia... and, of course, Poland lead the way in this group.
Just checked out that goal. Got a little bit lucky.
Rick, I think you're looking at the first goal there. You've got to check out the chipped effort going the right of screen in the top corner. You do your research. I'll keep the results coming because there were plenty of other key matches overnight as well. Probably the highest profile fixture overnight from a Euro 2020 perspective was Belgium up against Russia. 3-1 it finished in favour of Belgium. Russia down to 10 to close the match. Golovin sent off. He'll miss the next match. But they were made to work for it, Belgium.
They were.
Tielemans putting them ahead. And then Cheryshev equalising a couple of minutes later. 1-1 early on. Eden Hazard, penalty on the stroke of half-time. Some saying a bit controversial.
A little controversial. He tried to evade the defender at the time. He almost did a Lionel Messi in the respect of the Lyon match where he took his defender one way, went the other, and then went down in the box. So similar to sort of that. But there were two talking points that really I think we need to have a chat about today. And one's about Russia, and one's about the Belgium goalkeeper, Thibaut Courtois. We'll start with the Russia. This isn't the same Russia outfit that we saw Sergei Cherchesev put out at the FIFA World Cup.
We know that.
We need to forget that completely because the Belgian outfit in transition absolutely tore apart the 5-4-1 that the Russians attempted to play here. They were not compact. They were spread out. And that was clearly evident in the first goal by Youri Tielemans where you could just see the play was from a forced error, middle of the pitch, worked around by the Belgian outfit. Tielemans gets into the top of the box and finishes it off past the goalkeeper. That's the first thing. But secondly, lastly, we have never thought of Thibaut Courtois as a sweeper keeper. If you have a look at the Denis Cheryshev goal to make it 1-1, why was Thibaut Courtois thinking that all of a sudden he could channel his inner Fabian Barthez, play the ball around, and maybe even pass it off to a defender nearby? You could see he got frazzled. He wasn't able to clear it away on his left boot. He attempted to put it onto his right, and then what did he do? He lost the ball. We have to wonder now, with the whole Zidane re-entry in at Real Madrid, we know that he's seemingly lost his place to Keylor Navas. You've got a howler here. What do you do with him? What do you start to think about? Or is this the first sign of something a little bit more about Thibaut Courtois?
I think he has to find a new home club-wise because I don't think that under Zidane he will be the number one next season and that's not what he'll want.
But do you think that then carried through to this performance into this incident?
No doubt. Mentally, look, he hasn't played as much football. He's played football this season, but he clearly is in a position now where he's uncertain of his club future and that will throw a spanner in the works and that will not allow him to play at the highest level that he's capable of doing. So questions do need to be asked about Thibaut Courtois, no doubt about that. What does the future hold for him? Well, there are rumours aplenty we'll get to later on. But yes, I think in signs like that whereby that's not his natural game.
No.
Yes. There's certainly other issues off the pitch that he's battling. But look, in the end, Belgium win 3-1. Hazard rounds out the win with a double late on. 3-1, they pick up the points there against Russia. Look, we did predict that Belgium would win, but you're right in saying this isn't the same Russian outfit that were at the World Cup.
No.
Personnel-wise, again, to match the level that they had at the World Cup, not so straightforward as well. And obviously going away to Belgium, one of the world's best nations, was always going
to
be tough.
But it's good to see Denis Cheryshev at least keep up that form.
Of course.
Getting another goal, of course, the Villarreal man. He knows how to find the back of the net, and he was able to capitalise on that.
Of course. Other results in the group. No surprise as Cyprus had a 5-0 over San Marino. So Cyprus top the group. Well done to them. And Rick, in the other game, Kazakhstan 3 Scotland 0. Extraordinary.
I'm just smiling because I just went back and watched Borat about 5 weeks ago. One of the great movies of all time. Let me just put it out there. If you don't know, there's an iconic scene in there, of course, where Ali G, Sacha Baron Cohen, whatever you want to call him, decides to sing the Kazakhstan national anthem, mimics it in his own words, and... Well, as soon as Scotland did lose 3-0 to Kazakhstan, that was the first thing that popped into my mind.
Okay.
No, I'm not singing it today.
You weren't going to give us a rendition of it.
No. Not today. Maybe in the second hour.
The fans are disappointed, but nevertheless, Kazakhstan with an enormous win over Scotland, 3-0. Big result. No Robertson for Scotland, which was a blow, but look, in the end, a 3-0 resounding victory there for Scotland. I think any hope they had of going through this group. It's strange to write teams off so early on, but a 3-0 loss at Kazakhstan is not setting you up for anything in this group. And with Belgium and Russia in there, you would anticipate that from this point, well, clearly Belgium, but Russia would be in the box.
Well, considering that Chris Sutton as well, the Scotland coach, was saying that this was going to be a lay-down misère, it was going to be a walkover, they were going to get the results, this is a complete shock. You're right. This is going to throw the group a little bit out, and that's what Sean's come through and said. He's glad that Scotland got belted because Chris Sutton is exactly that. He's a bit of a knobhead. It's probably the nicest way to put it, but yes, unfortunately, he's right. But then when you also think about who have Kazakhstan beaten by multiple goals to nil over the years?
Rick, you tell me, you're the resident Kazakhstan fan.
I am, absolutely. Thank you, Borat. I'll go through. These are not powerhouse teams. Laos, Thailand, Andorra, San Marino, and now Scotland? It's got a ring to it, doesn't it?
It does. Check out that goal, as I was talking about a little earlier on, as Shah also...
Oh, there it is. Very nice.
Stunning goal. Shah also came through and said, how good's Piontek? Well,
yes.
Again, just so good. So good. There haven't been stories like his that I can recall coming with that level of rise, and so they're so rapid I can recall...
Not off the top of my head, no.
This decade, not at all.
No.
It's an... unless they were already... Neymar, for example, you know, in the last, whenever he burst onto the scene. But point being, a player who has come out of absolutely nowhere.
Obscurity,
like this. Jamie Vardy, I guess you could put in that bracket as well. But, no, you could put Jamie Vardy in that bracket, absolutely. But Piontek, this has been extraordinary. He's only getting better.
But what's even more interesting is, yes, Piontek is on the way up. But what about his Polish teammate up front, the captain?
Well, yeah.
Because he seemingly, as Piontek has gone up, Robert Lewandowski has dropped off. Whether it's got to do with age, whether it's got to do with being the 7-time Polish player of the year and the pressure that has come with that and being the captain as well. Issues at Bayern Munich. So maybe it's a couple of things that have maybe gone against Lewandowski. But it's been interesting that he hasn't been able to also capitalize on this and stay at a similar level as Krzysztof Piątek.
A bit of pressure on Lewandowski for the first time in his career at both club and national team level as well.
Yeah.
He's got a number two now where he's never had any pressure to own it up top. And all of a sudden, if Piątek starts scoring for Poland, well, questions will be asked about the future of Lewandowski. And I think for me, that's why I'm really confident that Lewandowski, not will, but could move on in the summer. I think he needs a fresh start somewhere just to revitalise his career. And Bayern Munich, of course, will be making some tough decisions in the summer, irrespective of whether or not they win the Bundesliga, which looks very likely now, quite extraordinary. But they've had an amazing turnaround there. But just some of the other results from the morning. I suppose we were on the cards for one of the great shocks in the history of Euro qualifiers as Azerbaijan took the lead at the World Cup finalists Croatia in Zagreb. Keep in mind, Rick, Croatia had never... ever in their history since 1994, lost a home Euro qualifier. Never lost. And Azerbaijan, out of all nations, led 1-0. They had two glorious opportunities in the first 20 minutes.
Could have scored in the 12th, and they ultimately did find the back of the net.
Took his second opportunity in the 19th, but then a late goal. The pressure was coming. The goal was coming. But I felt that as the match approached half time, if Croatia didn't get their goal,
they were in trouble.
They were in serious trouble. Yeah. Because if all of that momentum didn't eventuate and lead to a goal, I felt that Azerbaijan were in the box seat to not hold on for a result, but really hold on for all 3 points. Mm. I think the 15-minute halftime interval would really have frustrated Croatia had they not got that goal. But Vardasic, with his first ever international goal, pulled Croatia level 1 minute shy of halftime. Of course, the Rangers men there getting a goal that... A fine performance, a different look Croatia side, a couple of fresh faces in the lineup, but got his goal, and then the brilliance of Kramaric late on, 11 minutes from time, another stunning finish. 2-1 is how it finished. So Croatia get out of jail, but only just, because Azerbaijan were very close to holding on. They were resolute, they were gallant, but unfortunately they go down 2-1.
I'm also surprised, speaking of Andrei Kramaric, why we haven't spoken about him as being a potential transfer target. Mm. He's the most informed player at the moment for this national team. Sure, there are a few new faces. Sure, it's a little bit of a different period. But he keeps on banging in goals for Hoffenheim. He scored, what, I think 3 in the Champions League group stages before ultimately the German team got eliminated. He seems to score every second or third week for them in the Bundesliga. Why isn't anybody talking about him as a potential right winger that could join a club or even as a potential second striker?
Not sure, but 8 goals in his last 9 games for club and country. He's playing some really good football, and particularly in 2019, he's off to a flyer.
He is.
I agree. I think he should be on the radar of some of the very top clubs, particularly as Hoffenheim will very likely miss out on Champions League football next season.
He'd be one of those players you could pluck away with the lure of playing more European and especially Champions League football.
No doubt. But on the night here, Croatia, well, he was their saviour. But they were all there. Modric, Rakitic, Kovacic, the informed Petkovic, Perisic, Kramaric, of course. Rebic was brought off the bench. So, again, they are full strength. That's their full strength lineup. And maybe defensively, a couple of different faces in the lineup. But, yeah, an underwhelming display by Croatia who will... Look, I don't think they'll have any issues in this group. Very straightforward group, with all due respect to the other... participants in the group, but they certainly prove that no game is no easy game.
There's no walkovers.
Not at all. So Croatia 2, Azerbaijan 1. The other game in the group finished 2-0. Slovakia taking care of Hungary. That is a huge result for Slovakia, because you do have, well, who knows about Wales, but I really fancy Slovakia or Hungary to beat Wales to second place there. Wales not featuring in this round. So Slovakia and Croatia 3 points, Azerbaijan and Hungary 0 points, Wales yet to play. They will have their first match at home in a few days' time against Slovakia, whereas Croatia will be on the road to Hungary, and Azerbaijan will be in friendly action. So they are the results from this morning. Some massive results there, but plenty of action to come over the course of the weekend. Of course, a couple of really, really big games. Netherlands, Germany, the biggest of the lot. We'll get to see Italy in action, Spain in action, England in action tomorrow morning as well against the Czech Republic. The French are away to Moldova. Portugal and Ukraine do battle. Switzerland and plenty more. We'll preview that probably in the second hour. So do join us just after 1 p.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Time. We'll be in the studio taking your calls and casting our eye over all of that action. There's also African Cup of Nations. It's the final round of qualifiers for that. Some nations already qualified for the competition, but plenty of spots still up for grabs. So we'll take a look at what happened there as well. A couple of other matches overnight on the friendly front. Wales had a 1-0 win over Trinidad and Tobago. That was actually the day before last.
That was.
UAE 2, Saudi Arabia 1. Kosovo and Denmark, a match we touched on yesterday, finished 2-2. So Kosovo proving that they are, again, they could be the fairy tale story, obviously immense in the UEFA Nations League. And all of a sudden...
They led twice in this match. And Denmark had to chase back, and the 91st minute penalty to get through. Yeah.
So, look, Kosovo, against a Christian Eriksen-led Denmark, he came off the bench and scored a few minutes after coming on. But a very good result here for Kosovo, and looking forward to seeing their progress in the coming months across, obviously, the European qualifier. So a nice result there for them. There is one match being played at present. As often is the case when we're live, Rick, a live match between USA and Ecuador is currently 0-0.
We're not presuming too many. Maybe one at the absolute most to separate the two teams.
Pulisic is in action for the United States, and Antonio Valencia has made Valencia for Ecuador, of course. So 0-0, 66th minute. That match should finish towards the end of this first hour. We'll keep you updated with the live scores there. There are some friendly matches to come over the weekend as well. Lionel Messi will return for Argentina against Venezuela. That's where I was getting my Venezuela from. That's tomorrow morning. Brazil in action, Chile and Mexico, and plenty more. And one other match overnight in the China Cup. China 0, Thailand 1. Just a friendly match. But the point of this, Rick, is that this was the first match in charge for Fabio Cannavaro. 0-1 defeat. Cannavaro, of course, replacing Marcello Lippi as the boss of China. He's still also Guangzhou Evergrande's boss, I believe. So he's doing the double, the club and country. A 0-1 defeat. And on home soil, not a good start for the 2006 Italian World Cup winning captain.
No, and considering what happened during, of course, the Asian Cup, where the team was able to get out of the knockout group stage, not the greatest start whatsoever,
so
unfortunately.
This
there.
China Cup between China, it's just a...
It's a four-team tournament.
Four-team tournament. China, Thailand, Uzbekistan and Uruguay. Uzbekistan and Uruguay will meet shortly. But, yeah, it was 0-1 defeat there. China will now play off a third in that against either Uzbekistan or Uruguay. But that is your international recap. Full previews to come in the second hour, as we said. So a lot to get through. Stay tuned for that. But Rick, let's revert our attention back now to European football and then some transfer talk, because there are plenty of stories that have emerged overnight and going forward. We brought you the news earlier that Ronaldo has avoided that suspension for his gesture in the UEFA Champions League against Atleti in the round of 16. €20,000 fine, 2 hours of work, and he's back to square one. So well done to him. So great news there for Juventus. One of their fierce rivals, Inter, they have been dealing with one of the biggest sagas of the season. We brought you the news yesterday that it was rumoured that Mauro Icardi was back in the Inter setup, that an agreement had been reached between he and the club. It's now confirmed Mauro Icardi is back in training with the Nerazzurri. 6 weeks he's been away. He's been absent for that time. Injured, they've been saying, but he's back.
What an excuse that is.
I still believe, though, that the agreement is he will leave at season's end, but get back. Get us back to the Champions League, maximise your value, and let's get you to the club that you choose. But let's work together for this next few months and have a strong end to the season.
I'll scratch your back if you scratch my back. It's got that feeling about it, doesn't it?
I really think that is the only motivation behind this, because Icardi, he's filthy with the fact that they took the captaincy off him. Reports
as anybody would be.
Well, reports saying that he's gone to great lengths to vocalise how disappointed he is with the... with an action that he's labelled very petty from the owners and decision-makers there at Inter. So he's completely fallen out, but clearly he's the best player that club have at the moment. And if he can step up, score, keep them quiet and then move on, I think it will be a good result for all involved.
Yep, agreed 100%.
Where does he go is going to be the question. Real linked, but where else could he go? Not for Real, who are linked to half of Europe.
Yeah. See, I still think that a Barcelona return is still on the cards.
Yep.
I mean, the whole youth team set up, coming through those ranks, Barcelona now seemingly are after a centre forward, and they're pretty vocal about it. Luka Jovic is the one that's constantly been linked. But a lot of those players that do come through the Barcelona setup eventually make their way back to the first team. And that's where I still believe Icardi will end up. I know he's got the fractured relationship with Lionel Messi, and that will be a telling factor.
At national team level.
At national team level, this is.
Yep.
But I think at club team level, if you've come through the system, they do keep an eye on you very, very closely from La Masia stage. And I think ultimately, he will end up going there. If I had to pick a team for where his destination could be.
Okay. I think
yours?
I think that makes sense given the future of Luis Suarez and the current situation there. But I think Barcelona are investing money maybe elsewhere at this point. There have been a couple of cheaper alternatives linked to that role. I think Real is the option. And I do think that Real Madrid will be on the lookout for a number nine. I think Icardi, I just think the image suits Real Madrid a little better at this point.
The rock star, Galactico type move.
I think so. And I think if Icardi can play under Zidane, play at the highest level, I think it. I can just envisage Icardi in a Real shirt next season, and I think it'd be a suitable fit. But that would mean certainly that Benzema would have to leave the club. Mm. And you know what? I can actually see Karim Benzema going to Milan. AC, that is.
Explain.
Look, I think that Karim Benzema, who's been linked to AC Milan and Arsenal, I think the two biggest clubs he's been linked to consistently over the journey, I think that he could find a position. Look, he could also go to Inter if Icardi were to leave, but
of course.
I think that Benzema could find a home in Italy. I think the, again, it's...
But do Milan need another striker?
Well, Milan...
Because that's the other
Inter certainly do.
Inter, yes.
With or without Icardi. So if it's Inter, sure. He could go to AC Milan. Do they need another striker? Look, the future...
Because they've still got... They've got Piontek on the books.
They do, of course.
Andre Silva has not confirmed that he will be staying at Seville. So they get him back come June 1.
That will be interesting.
Patrick Coutrone has been hinting that he will be gone or going. Do they really need another
one? Look, I don't see any reason why Piontek and Benzema couldn't work together up top. Obviously, Andre Silva throws a bit of a spanner in the works there. I think that Karim Benzema, where he's at in his career, I just feel a move to Italy would suit where he is currently at. He's a very, very experienced, very talented centre-forward who I just feel would find a home there in Italy. I couldn't see him playing in the Premier League. I don't think that would suit him at this stage of his career. And I don't really feel that a move to France or Germany would be on the cards, and he will certainly not go anywhere else in Spain. So I just feel a move to Italy, to one of the two Milan sides, could be an option there, whether it's Inter or AC Milan. But again, I think Champions League football will play a role in that, mm-hmm. and certainly I fancy AC, despite being behind Inter in the table, I just feel that that could be a suitable option.
I'm sure his wages will also have a very big say on where he goes. He does have quite high wage demands already at Real Madrid.
Could be a direct replacement for Icardi then.
Yes, could be. Won't rule it out, but very well could be.
Inter certainly not in the Scudetto race any longer, but Napoli still are. And just a quick one on Napoli. Calleon of Napoli has come out and said a word of warning to Juventus, saying that our dream of winning our Scudetto is still well and truly alive. Words are words, Rick. I think this
season might have to be ruled out with a very, very thick black text that. I don't think there's any chance this season. The gap is way too big.
Maybe season after.
Season after.
Last bit of news before we get to some transfers from the European front. Jose Mourinho has revealed that he's already said no to 3 or 4 different offers at club level. No official word on who those clubs are, but interesting still with Mourinho what the future holds. I really believe there's only one option, and that's Inter.
And it seems now there is only one.
That can only be one. There are no other reported options at this point in time. So if he's going to remain at club level, it can only be Inter. It really can only be Inter. So the fact that he said he's turned down multiple offers, we know that Lyon were jokingly linked. We know that Benfica were linked. We know that there was some interest from other French clubs, where reports were saying. But I'm not so sure what these offers are, where these offers have come from that he's actually turned down.
Yeah, it's a bit strange to work out multiple offers.
Three or four, he said. So, look,
I don't even know there were 3 or 4 teams that would be interested in Jose Mourinho, considering what he has done over the last 10 years, and in particular, what he has done over, say, the last 5 or 6.
Yeah, we've discussed at length previously, and I don't see there being 3 or 4 potential fits. Certainly not at the level that he requires, but then again, maybe a few lower clubs. Look, Benfica, very proud club, one of the very best in world football, but clearly not at the level of Real, Inter, Chelsea, and where he's been prior to that. No. So it could be an interesting future for Mourinho, but I think if he wants to remain at that level, the only option, Inter Milan, but depends on what they do with Luciano Spalletti, who is obviously still contracted to be manager of the club into next season. One factor that could play a role in that, of course, is the transfer front and what happens. And we've just touched on, again, just speculation, but potentially Benzema, if Icardi were to go to Real Madrid, Benzema could go the other way. We could see Mourinho and Benzema reunited.
Could be very, very interesting. Plenty of fireworks could be occurring.
Absolutely. But, of course, Benzema's future, not the only player who is linked away from Real Madrid. Gareth Bale, certainly one. Now, I'm very confident Bale will be gone next season, irrespective of what, obviously, Zidane has said and what the club have hinted. Bale still has value about him. Bale still has a lot to offer another club. And the latest reports are suggesting that Gareth Bale could be key to bring Paul Pogba to the Bernabeu.
Wow.
Now, this is interesting because, of course, Paul Pogba, while on international duty with France the other day, came out and said that to play for Zidane at Real Madrid would be a dream. There has to be something to that. You don't just make those comments. Bale to go the other way for Pogba to come in and maybe bail in some cash for Pogba. I think that'd be a nice move for both clubs. I think that Pogba, Man United cannot afford to let Pogba leave, but if a player wants out, which I still believe there is some of that there, the reports and rumours were so strong earlier on in the campaign, but I really feel that could be a nice move for both clubs.
It could be. It might involve some cash as well, you would think. I don't think this is going to be a direct swap for swap. I think one might be worth a little bit more than the other on the open market just at this present stage. And we know that Real Madrid do want to sort of change that midfield around that little bit. You know, there's been reports about Toni Kroos also departing. We know about Luka Modric getting on in age. So I guess Pogba could be a very nice fit. He does fit the Galacticos mold.
Yep.
Bale going out, I still keep on going back to those Champions League final comments under Zidane. That still does linger in the back of the mind. He was gone. He still is gone in my eyes. He's only got another 10 games to prove himself. It could happen.
Yep.
I won't rule it out. I won't say it's a definite yes, but I think I'm more leaning at this stage towards it being a no, maybe towards the end of the year, maybe swinging towards a yes.
I think Bale for me is certainly one of the favourites to leave. That report also went on to say that if Eden Hazard doesn't make the move to Chelsea, then there's another alternative. This is one of the stranger alternatives. Yesterday it was Mohamed Salah. The day before it was Sadio Mane. Today's is Felipe Anderson.
It is.
West Ham. Incredible. Not the player that you would have thought, but one of many players linked to Real Madrid. So many players linked in. Many players linked out. And Matt said, and I've read this report as well, Napoli were looking at three players from Real. Obviously, Napoli and Real do have a nice relationship
there
on the transfer front. Casemiro, Marcelo and Isco have all seen their names linked to Napoli as well. Two of those players in Marcelo and Isco have also been linked to Juventus as well. So there could be a changing of the guard there. Luka Modric, of course, still linked to Inter. There could be changes aplenty at the Bernabeu.
I just can't see, in all honesty, Casemiro leaving Real Madrid.
No, neither.
He's too important to this team. So I know he's going to be linked to a lot of teams, but I think Casemiro moving on from Los Blancos, he's too pivotal to how Zinedine Zidane played over the last four seasons in particular. So maybe not Casemiro, but certainly Marcelo has been mentioned from pillar to post.
He'll leave.
He will be gone somewhere. Isco as well. But with Isco, and this also brings it back to the Felipe Anderson link, you've got James Rodriguez that comes back in.
That's right.
We know that, and we've said it for time and time again, he will not be staying at Bayern Munich. His family want to go back to a Spanish-speaking language.
Yep.
It's their natural language. It's not that they haven't felt well and accustomed in Munich and they haven't felt welcomed, but they want to go back to where they naturally fit in a little bit better. They assimilate a little bit better. Italy, I can't see Hummers going, but certainly going back to Spain,
it makes sense.
It
makes complete sense, and it would then also facilitate the move away for Isco.
That's right.
And again, Zidane has expressed his love for all of those attacking players, Asensio, Isco, Bale, Benzema, in some way, shape or form. But there is no way that, for me, two or three will certainly leave.
Yep.
There's no doubt about it.
But there is one other name that he has mentioned, Irving Lozano. Chuke!
Yes.
Now, I do have a little bit of a crush on Irving Lozano.
He's been linked to Napoli. 40 million euro, the fee set to be.
Go and splash the cash as fast as you can. Sign him up. Officialise the deal upon the very first day of the transfer window open.
Napoli have been still solid in attack, but again, they're thin and too reliant on the key men. Obviously, they've got the four in Insigne, Mertens, Calleon and Milik. But I haven't felt the consistent quality of particularly Calleon and Mertens has been at the same level this season as we've seen in previous seasons. Lozano to come in would be a great get.
And he's still so young, 21 years old.
Feels like he's been on the scene for a very long time. He'd be a very good signing for Napoli for next season.
Well, he'd be a great signing for anybody who needs sort of a winger slash forward who can cut in, have a shot on a right and find the back of the net, or just get to the back post and punch a goal through past the goalkeeper.
I do agree with that, absolutely. So that's the rumours there. $40 million the fee for Napoli in their pursuit for the Mexican international. Now, elsewhere, one of the biggest names who will be linked away strongly in the summer and will make a move away in the summer is Ajax captain Matthias De Ligt. Reports last night coming out of Italy saying that he has told his agent, Mino Raiola, that his club of choice is Barcelona. Now, not the first time we've heard this.
Nope.
But, again, reports strengthening that he will want, or his ultimate goal is to join friend, colleague, and Ajax teammate Frankie de Jong at Barcelona at the Nou Camp.
And Jesper Chillison as well.
Yes, but of course, current Ajax teammate course, want to course. Make the move along of with him.
Or former Ajax teammate as well in Chelsea. There's a few little links here.
Too complex. Regardless, he wants Barcelona. Of course, Barca and Juve in pole position to pursue this player. Yeah. But they're saying that Barca now have just edged out in front of Juventus with the player actually verbalising that this is where I want to be.
Yeah, no, I think this one's been written on the cards for quite some time now. It's just a matter of now when, not if, to be perfectly honest.
I still think Juventus will win the race. I really do. Again, Barcelona do need to reinforce in various areas of the park. Can they really, after spending 80 on De Jong, can they really spend another, well, 70, 80, 160 on two players? Yes, they may sell Coutinho, but they do need to bring in some reinforcements. I'd say one midfielder, one attacker as well, with or without Coutinho. So
it's like we keep on arguing. Who falls out at the other end?
Who falls out at the other end? Not sure. Not sure, but there will be many movements you feel at Barca and Real.
Yeah, you'd think, okay, out of that midfield, well, Vidal you've just signed, probably not. Busquets been there 10-plus years, probably not. Ivan Rakitic, well, he's been linked, but probably not because he loves Spain too much. Artur, you only signed him a year ago.
No way.
You know, there's already your midfield. In attack, Ousmane Dembele, you're not going to get your money back. Coutinho, well, he's the only one who's been linked, but he'll probably be the one who ends up having
they'll
to
take
give
a loss on Coutinho.
They'll have to, but it'll be a big, big loss. It'll be a good 30-40% loss compared to what they paid.
But
only
they have to, because if they want to bring in someone new, we brought you the news yesterday that Jovic is linked there for 60
That's right.
million. I think you'd happily sell Coutinho at a loss to bring in a form player in Jovic who you feel could, for example.
So that one there as well. And then even in defence, if you are going to bring in De Ligt, well, Samuel Umtiti's coming back from a knee injury, so you're probably not going to sell him at the moment, considering he is going to be seemingly the future of this team. Clement Longley has only just come in over the summer. Gerard Piquet? I know he's been there, you know, 8-9 years.
Defensively, they have to ask some questions.
You've just got to wonder, what do you do there?
That's where the De Ligt acquisition makes
sense. Jordi Alba just got re-signed on a huge release clause, and there was no chance he was ever going to go. And Nelson Semedo is the right back, but Nelson Semedo has a little bit of work. He's probably got a year's worth of development still in him, and he is a very, very good player.
Yep.
I just don't know whether he will ultimately turn into a Barcelona world-class player. And you always bring it back to, can he be at an equal level as Dani Alves? Mm. And that's going to be hard, because you don't want to start to compare the two people and the two players.
Of course.
But ultimately, when you have so much success with that Brazilian international in your team, you kind of have to start to compare him over and over.
Some news on Dani Alves to come shortly. But while we are in Spain, obviously there are some uncertainties at the third biggest club in Spain, Atletico Madrid, surrounding their superstar Antoine Griezmann, who of course turned 28 yesterday, said to be weighing up his options once again. Of course, he made the big decision at the end of last season to commit himself to Atleti. Just hasn't worked out this season. His form's been brilliant. But again, for the club, out of everything, they are still in the La Liga title race, but realistically
hardly not
won't win that. So could be another season without any success for Antoine Griezmann and Atletico Madrid. Reports out of Madrid, though, are suggesting that should he leave at season's end, and I believe he will, and I do believe Barcelona could be an option, Paulo Dybala, again, the Juventus man linked to another club, that's the fourth or fifth club this week, he could be the replacement. And look, he does have the feel of an Atleti player, Dybala. I could actually see him playing there for that club. But reports closer to home for he in Italy are suggesting that there is no way he wants out.
But you've just touched on it, and it's with Griezmann. Griezmann to Barcelona. We just touched on it a moment ago. Where are they going to afford all this money to? So that's why it just lends itself as to how much money does Barcelona need to shuffle out.
That, Griezmann.
But bringing it back to Dybala, and that's what I think the argument is now. It's what, you're right, four or five teams already wanting Dybala's signature.
Liverpool are another that were linked overnight as well. So I think clubs are starting to sense that Dybala may be there for the taking, with Juventus looking to plot some bigger moves, as we brought you earlier on in the week. We shared a clip around earlier in the week of our discussion about Dybala and his worth and value on the market in comparison to the remainder of his teammates. Some out there were questioning, well, surely if Juventus needed to cash in on someone, surely they could fetch more money for Ronaldo. Well, in actual fact, no. And I had a couple of conversations online with a few people about this. Dybala at the moment, according to transfermarket.com, which values all the players, all the clubs, he and Ronaldo are both valued at £90 million. Now, given the fact that Dybala is what?
25, 26.
8, 9 years younger than Ronaldo. And given the clear demand for Dybala, would be a lot greater than Ronaldo at this stage, you'd think. I'm not saying that any club out there would turn down Cristiano Ronaldo.
No.
But I don't think a club would be willing to spend $100 million, whatever the case is, on Ronaldo tomorrow. But again, that won't be an issue anyway, so don't worry about that hypothetical.
The one benefit that Ronaldo does have, just in this argument, just briefly, is the market.
The marketing side, of course. You
know, the whole social media side, the advertising and brand that is Cristiano Ronaldo.
But for a club like Atletico looking to build for the future, they're not purchasing Cristiano Ronaldo.
No.
Juventus are not looking to build for the future. They're looking to win right now.
Correct.
So Paulo Dybala, given where he would move to, would be for a club that are looking to build. That is a Real Madrid. That is a Barcelona looking to re-energize their attack for the next 5 years. These clubs, Atletico Madrid, are wanting to build something going forward. Ronaldo and Juve are ready to win tomorrow. There is a difference. So Dybala, given the fact that there'd be strong interest, as we've seen reportedly this week, he would fetch a significant price. And for me, he'd certainly go over that valuation of £90 million.
What do you reckon he'd fetch?
Well, again, given the interest, I think...
Considering all things...
For me, 110 to 120. Certainly.
That'd be a bargain, you'd almost say, wouldn't you?
110 to 120 plus. I think he's worth, probably based on the market and what we've seen, 140 to 150. But look, I think that the prices may not be as inflated as they were. I don't think Philip Coutinho would ever go for anywhere near 140 ever again.
Nope.
So I do feel that 140 valuation on today's market is probably at about 80, 90. Therefore, I feel Dybala would go for probably 110, 120, which probably when that Coutinho move was done was a 140, 150 move. But I think...
He was in the form of his life at that stage, Coutinho.
He was.
He really was.
But, and again, Dybala's form has been a little indifferent. So I think that Dybala would go for about 110, 120. But I certainly think that it would be a lot more than the £90 million that's being quoted as his current valuation. But that is a big, big development there with Paulo Dybala. Again, reports saying they'll assess his future at season's end. A couple more to go before we wrap up this first hour on Facebook Live. Plenty more coming up on afternoons on FNR in the second hour. Dani Alves, Rick. He's set to sign an extension. You mentioned him a little earlier. He's set to sign a 2-year extension at Paris Saint-Germain to keep him there till 2021. He'll be 38 by then. Neymar, his good friend and club and country teammate, said to be absolute key, demanding that they re-sign his Brazilian teammate, saying that he would feel better if his compatriot would prolong his adventure with PSG with him by his side. So Neymar, we've heard this before, Neymar wanting to keep his friends close by, and obviously
especially his Brazilian counterpart,
strong Brazilian contingent in that squad. But Dani Alves set to be handed a 2-year extension. To me, that means Neymar is staying put.
Of course. Never going anywhere whatsoever, as I have said time and time again. No chance.
All right, a few other ones just to wrap up the program. Javier Mascherano, who's currently in China, set to rescind his contract there, could return to Argentina. So, interesting, another... Well, there have been a couple of players who have had a successful career there, but some that have just called it quits early on.
Well, there's been a few. I mean, we touched on Alexander Pato during the week. There's usually one or two of these sort of big-name European players that go over to China, make a little bit of money, and then just want to sort of cancel that contract and move back either to Europe or, in his case, go back to South America. It's interesting. It's a paradigm that we'll have to discuss at a later date, but it's something I think we need to analyse as to why it happens far more frequently than it normally would.
Mascherano, 28 appearances with Hebei China Fortune, so linked back to Argentina, of course. Started his days with River Plate as a youth player there, so, and did play for the senior team for a couple of years before moving to Corinthians, and then that moved to West Ham before Liverpool and, of course, Barcelona. So maybe a return to River Plate could be on the cards. Barella, of course, one of the talented midfielders in Italy, young midfielder coming through the ranks at Cagliari. He's linked to Chelsea, and Inter said that he'll put off talks about his future until season's end. And just to wrap up, while on the topic of Chelsea, they are unlikely to keep Gonzalo Higuain for next season, according to Sport Mediaset, which means a return to Juventus will be on the cards, but then they will certainly either sell or loan him out again because, well, they've made it very clear they have no willingness to keep the Argentine in their ranks.
Yeah. He's going to be a fascinating case to follow over the next few months.
Sad state of affairs there. Look, despite the brilliance at Juventus, I think he should have just stayed at Napoli. He could have led that Napoli side to a Scudetto, of course, in the season where Juventus won the Scudetto with Napoli having that record-breaking points finish for a second-place team. If Higuain was on the other side, Napoli would have won the championship.
Agreed. 100% agree.
All right, on that note, we are done. Stay tuned for the second hour coming up on our app and our website, footballnationradio.com. Of course, you are listening to us right here on Afternoons on FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Afternoons on FNR Football Nation Radio with Adriano De Monte and Rick D'Andrea.
Welcome to the second hour of Afternoons here on FNR Football Nation Radio. Of course, you're with Adriano Del Monte and Rick D'Andrea. We are previewing what's to come this weekend in the second half of the program. Euro 2020 qualifiers are in full swing. Rick, the World Cup feels like it was yesterday.
It really does.
I'm not even talking about the 2018 World Cup. I'm talking about the ones before that. Euro 2020. We've come that far. It's extraordinary, but looking forward to it because there are some massive matches this weekend. Headlined by Netherlands and Germany. What a game that will be. The two nations have had some recent history, and we'll give you a full preview and tactical analysis of that match in the lead up to their meeting later this weekend. I think it's a Monday morning kickoff local time here in Australia. Of course, all the Euro 2020 qualifiers in Australia live and exclusive on Optus Sport. We'll update you again on all the big news stories doing the rounds, some big news at club level in Europe and those results from overnight. There was a live match, Rick, in the first hour.
Has that finished yet?
It has. And, Rick, the United States, plucky 1-0 win. They got their goal late on. Zardes with the goal 9 minutes from time. USA 1, Ecuador 0. That match played at Orlando City Stadium in Orlando. So a nice result for the US. Good to see some of these nations that missed out on the World Cup now with preparations for, well, upcoming continental competitions and tournaments and then the 2022 World Cup. Good to see them all improving slowly but surely. But plenty to come in this second hour. The lines are open. The tweet line is open, of course, at FNR underscore radio. 9944999 if you'd like to give us a call. But Rick, a recap of those results from overnight, the news stories in Europe before we preview what's to come this weekend.
Thank you very much and good afternoon once again. The Netherlands have gotten their UEFA 2020 qualification campaign off to the perfect start with a crushing 4-0 win over Belarus. Memphis Depay was the star of the show with two goals and an assist, ably supported by Gini Wijnaldum and Virgil van Dijk. Belgium have also gotten the 3 points against Russia in their opening fixture with a 3-1 win. Yuri Tillemans and an Eden Hazard double ensured the Red Devils claimed that result. Croatia, they had to do it the hard way to beat Azerbaijan in their opening clash with Ramil Shadayev opening the scoring before Barasic and Kramaric ensured that the Valtreni kept their perfect home record intact. In some of the other results, substitute Krzysztof Piątek ensured Poland defeated Austria 1-0 and claimed the only away win by any nation in this morning's action. Kazakhstan defeated Scotland 3-0. Cyprus claimed a 5-0 win over San Marino, the biggest result this morning. North Macedonia claimed a 3-1 win over a 10-man Latvia. Slovakia beat Hungary 2-0, while Israel and Slovenia were the only two nations to play out a draw, that game finishing 1-1. Sami Khedira has been given the all-clear to resume intensive training. The German international was diagnosed with an irregular heartbeat requiring specialist treatment in mid-February.
he could potentially play as early as the Champions League quarterfinal against Ajax. His teammate Cristiano Ronaldo has been fined €20,000 for his explicit cojones gesture against Atletico Madrid in their round of 16 Champions League second leg. The Portuguese star risked being banned for a match but was handed the same punishment as Atletico boss Diego Simeone, who made the gesture in the first leg. Leicester City players not on international duty, coach Brendan Rodgers, and members of his backroom staff have travelled to Thailand to pay their respects at the cremation ceremony of former owner Vijay Shivranaprava. Vijay died in a helicopter accident exiting King Power Stadium in October. His body has been resting in a temple for 100 days in accordance with Buddhist tradition and was cremated on Thursday in a ceremony attended by the Thai king. And finally, the mother of former Cardiff striker Emiliano Sala has put pressure on the Welsh club to cede to Nantes' demands. FIFA have stepped in to oversee this saga as the EPL side are unwilling to honour their part of the agreement due to a preliminary report not satisfying all their requirements for the transfer fee. Adrian, on this Friday afternoon, back to you.
Nicely done. Let's recap those results with a quick look at what actually took place on the pitch this morning before previewing what is to come. Croatia were on the verge of a bit of a shock. They'd never lost a home European qualifying match in their history. And they went a goal down early on to Azerbaijan in a match which we both predicted would be a fairly routine win. They win in the end 2-1, but any major cause for concern for Croatia?
I think what it says to me is that even though the opposition may not be as strong as previously played, you can't afford to take anyone lightly.
And these are the World Cup finalists.
And these are the World Cup finalists who went through those woes in the UEFA Nations League as well. So I wouldn't say this is a different Croatia team. Sure, there are people that have retired. Sure, there is going to be a bit of a new look, a bit of a freshen up. But 70% of those World Cup finalists that played in July 15 were out there on the pitch. And so you just have to wonder, is Zlatko Dalic's men, or are they fully switched on, realizing what they need to do and fully committed to the cause? Mm. That's the only thing that sort of just floats in the back of my mind a little bit. It mentally lingers there because you would have thought Azerbaijan should have had a 2-0 lead in this one straight out after 20 minutes. They didn't switch on for that period. They really didn't. They looked off. But as soon as Barisic got that goal just before halftime, then we started to see the Croatia of old, the Croatia that we saw in the World Cup. I think that Croatia needs to switch on not only for a half, but for the entire 90 minutes. And if we see that, then everything will be forgotten and forgiven.
The boss of Azerbaijan is actually a Croatian, Nikola Jurcevic. He actually said pre-game, he said to media that Croatia historically, not that they disrespect the minnows, but they struggle against the minnows in their mental approach. Mm. And so, well, taking those comments on board, it was
exactly
hardly surprising
happened.
Because early on, you're right, it should have been 2-0 within 20 minutes. They took their second opportunity, missed the first. But, yeah, really, Croatia have proven this historically, that they have struggled at times against minnows. And Azerbaijan previously had actually held Croatia to a 0-0, I think 10 years ago or so, but that was at home. Mm. But again, a shock was on the cards. The class did prevail in the end with Kramaric scoring a glorious winner. But yeah, the World Cup hangover is very real for Croatia still. An underwhelming Nations League campaign followed up by this. They've been drawn in a relatively weak group, but still some work to do just to ensure their safe passage through to the Euro 2020 finals. One of the other alarming stats this morning was that there were only 4 points gained on the road out of the 10 matches. So of the 10 teams away, only 4 points picked up. Of course, Slovenia with a 1-1 at Israel, but Poland with that 1-0 at Austria. The fact that it is always tough to go away from home in any competition, let alone national team or even at club level, that's an enormous result for a Poland team who will fancy themselves as a danger at an international competition, and off the back of being relegated out of Ligue A in the Nations League, the perfect response by Piontek, the hero, and Poland.
Yeah, it was the perfect response. He did come off the bench, as you touched on. But I think Poland, as good as they have been in the past, especially over the last, say, 3 or 4 years, I think now we have to start to question them a little bit more. After what happened to them at the World Cup and the calamities that happened there, after what happened, of course, in the UEFA Nations League with Portugal and Italy in that league, now we have to start to see a real Poland. We have to start seeing almost the Poland that we saw leading up into the UEFA Euro 2016 qualifiers, where they did get Germany, but they did get Gibraltar, and they really did put a performance in against both those nations. We need to see that Poland. And, of course, getting an away result, the first up against Austria, it almost puts them into prime position to go through and qualify. It really does.
So early on, but it does. Their next match will be at home to Latvia in a few days' time, where they'll have a convincing win and go into the, well, go to the end of this international break with 6 points from six and very likely zero goals conceded. Latvia were in action this morning. Did score, but lost 3-1 at Macedonia.
And went down to 10 men, if I'm not mistaken, as well.
They did. So Macedonia topped the group, Poland second, but yeah, both teams will be confident of, well, Macedonia away to Slovenia in the next game. Imagine Macedonia can win that. 6 points from six to start. And they could be well clear of Austria, who have a tricky test away to Israel. So a very nice group, this one. But Poland with clearly the most important win, I feel, of any nation today. So big, big result there. Belgium and Russia was a high-profile fixture. 3-1 Belgium win. Belgium, similarly to Croatia, I suppose, this brilliant World Cup. Pipped at the post in the Nations League. Not as underwhelming in the Nations League. Obviously, Belgium being taken care of by Switzerland in the UEFA Nations League in the final game to miss out on progression to the finals. But a 3-1 against a slightly impressive slash also at times lackluster Russian side. An impressive win, but a different look Belgian side, particularly in the middle of the park.
Yeah, they decided to experiment a little bit with some of the players. Yuri Tielemans in particular getting his much deserved start in 11 spots, and he was able to capitalize early on, getting that goal, making it 1-0. So Roberto Martinez, I guess, you know, one thing that we were questioning for a very long time was, does he have the depth? Does he have enough players of an equally high standard to not only, say, for instance, go through to a semi-final of a World Cup, maybe make it one step further, but then, of course, maybe make it through to UEFA Nations League, you know, echelons, the semi-final and the final, the third place match, depending on how things go. Does he have enough players of a quality to be able to contend and get there? Well, I think now might be a little bit of a time to maybe experiment with one or two. Yeah. Yes, getting a great result against Russia, it maybe not have been the time to experiment, but it's worked in his favour in this occasion.
Yeah, Belgium, of course, strongly, strongly fancied to progress from Group I. They're currently third, though, after a couple of big wins in other matches in the group. But Belgium next up away to Cyprus. Cyprus are the group leaders in that group. They had a 5-0 over San Marino.
So biggest home win of the morning as well.
Biggest win. No surprise against San Marino. The worst ranked nation in world football. But Cyprus 5, San Marino 0.
But Cyprus did exactly what Cyprus needed to do.
That's right.
Get a result. Yes, get the 3 points. But get it with a big enough margin. And that's something that may be forgotten after only one match day.
Yeah, yeah.
But when it comes to, say, 7, 8, 9 match days and goal difference may be a factor, this is incredible for Cyprus.
It'll be something
that we'll have to look at in maybe about a year or so's time, but it could be a determining factor. It may be finishing between 2nd, 3rd, and who knows, 4th.
Well, San Marino up next. It doesn't get easy. It's not easy, but for Cyprus, they get the points there. Cyprus up next, Belgium. And San Marino, of course, will take on Scotland. Now, just how important is this for Scotland? Because, Rick, they had arguably the most disastrous performance of the morning, going down 3-0 to your boys, Kazakhstan.
I'm trying to look for our producer, Damon, but I don't know where he's gone. But anyways, I think it's one of those times that I do belt out a movie reference. Borat is the occasion. And if you recall the moment in the movie where he decides to sing the Kazakhstan national anthem that I think he made up.
How's it
to
go?
The tune of the Land of the Brave, United Star Spangled Banner, United States Anthem. I'll just do the first opening stanza.
Go for it, Ricky.
Kazakhstan, greatest country in the world. All other countries are run by little girls.
Kazakhstan, number one exporter of potassium. All other countries have inferior potassium. More than that, you will not get out of me. If you want to see me do that again, check out Adriano's Snapchat/Instagram/Facebook/Twitter/ every other platform that you can get a hold of him going around there.
Miffed. Extraordinary. Absolutely extraordinary stuff. But that is the performance of the morning for me, because we talk about nations who – we talk about nations that are very unlikely to appear at an international tournament. Kazakhstan right up there in the mix. And that is a big result against a Scottish side who would be hopeful of a Euro 2020 berth. Mm. And that result puts them on the back foot. And for me, I'd say that 0 points and 0 goals away to Kazakhstan – ends their hopes of a Euro 2020 qualification spot through this means.
It does. Means they're going to have to do it the hard way.
The other results in the morning. So wins at home for Northern Ireland against Estonia. Slovakia taking care of Hungary. And the last one was Netherlands 4-0 Belarus. So Netherlands, yes, it's this bright phase. It's the start of the next generation for the Dutch national team. Pleasing to see, because they've undergone a difficult period now, but they've come out the other side. And of all of those nations that missed the World Cup, those big nations, Rick, Netherlands, Italy, Ghana,
US,
Chile, there are a few more. They are in the best position at the present time, no doubt about it.
Agreed 100%. It looks like that the old way of doing things at the Iran is seemingly out the door. The harsh words, the harsh realities, the harsh truths have been spoken to all the players. And now we are going to see a fired up orange outfit over the next few years take to the field and try and get every single result that they can.
They just look so good. As we said, it's extraordinary that most of these players were available. Obviously, some very, very young players who weren't at the same level. But, I mean, it's incredible just to see how quickly this Dutch national team have gone from being a nation that's missed the World Cup to a nation that on paper look like world beaters. And I guess that's what a phenomenal youth system and a youth setup does. And that's what the Dutch have done so well historically. How far can they go is the question in Euro 2020 and beyond. I think a long way. I think they'll be a real contender at the Euro 2020 finals. Of course, that competition played right across Europe. There were some friendly matches overnight as well. UAE 2-1 winners over Saudi Arabia. Kosovo and Denmark played out a 2-2 draw, and we brought you the result earlier. But USA and Ecuador has just wrapped up in Orlando. 1-0 win for the United States. In the China Cup, China have lost 0-1 at home to Thailand. The first match for Fabio Cannavaro, the new manager of China, ending in defeat. Disappointing start for he.
It is. It's not a good sign for Cannavaro there. Yes, he might be having to juggle two at club and nation at the same time. He obviously is still the coach of Guangzhou Evergrande in the CSL. But, yeah, it's not a good start. Considering that China as well had that run in the Asian Cup, they got out of the knockout stage. They got out of the group stage, made it to the knockout stage. Unfortunately, just couldn't get beyond that, unfortunately, there for the Golden Dragons. Not a good look whatsoever. And it is still a friendly. It is still Uzbekistan. It is Uruguay in the other game that still needs to be played in order to determine who will ultimately go through to the final. It just would have been nice that on home soil, in a trophy such as this, that they actually would have made that final.
Agreed. Absolutely agreed. But more.
Well, they also missed out last year as well. If you remember, Wales were also in that group and knocked them out.
I do. More football to come this weekend. Looking forward to it. On the other side of the break, we'll preview all of the action across the international scene. Stay tuned. Plenty more coming up right here on Afternoons on FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Afternoons on FNR Football Nation Radio with Adriano De Monte and Rick D'Andrea.
Welcome back to Afternoons here on FNR Football Nation Radio. Full previews of all the action to come this weekend very shortly at FNR_radio if you have any thoughts on those games or anything else doing the rounds in football. But if you'd like to call us, and we've got Luke on the line, 9944999. Luke, welcome to the program. What would you like to discuss today?
Adriano, Rick, thanks so much for taking the call. Look, the first hour you mentioned about Higuain and his contract situation. How much do you think he'd be worth right now? What do you reckon?
33-year-old who's had a couple of sort of up and down seasons. Yep. Uh-huh.
Big contract.
Who needs a striker? He's on a fair big wicket.
Struggled at Milan, struggled at Chelsea.
Yep.
I'd say 60 to 70 at the absolute. And that's probably being very, very generous. If I had to probably put a big price range, anywhere between the lower end of, say, 40, the higher end of about 70. That's probably being very generous in that range.
Rick, that's the biggest price range I've ever heard. That
I know, but you've got to imagine, like, you've also got to think about, what did he do at Napoli? What did he do at
Juventus? He was one of the best in the world.
Correct.
Yeah.
So on his day, you give him a good 30 matches, he could deliver you 15 to 20 goals. Sure, he hasn't shown it at the moment. At Milan, he hasn't shown it at Chelsea because he's only scored against the two bottom teams in the Premier League. But I think you have to sort of go a little bit in that sort of price bracket because he does have age on his side. He's only probably got another two or three seasons at the most to perform at that high level.
Transfermarket.co.uk, my trusty valuation source, has him valued at £40 million, which I think is about right. I don't think 70 would be realistic. But then again, who would actually want Higuain? This is the other issue because, well, he's failed at Milan. He's failed at Chelsea. I was certain he would succeed at Milan, as were many fans out there. Chelsea hasn't worked out. If he returns to Juve, they've already said they don't want him.
Mm.
Where does he actually go? I can understand the fee, but who would actually want Gonzalo Higuain? I think that's the deeper question there, Luke.
Yeah, I think mid-40s, I think, for him. It's a tough deal to broker because his form... Look, he's been one of the great strikers in the last decade, but this one's a tough deal to broker. Just quickly, the Italians on Sunday morning, I think they need to be two from two by this time next week. And they've got Liechtenstein on Wednesday.
That's right.
Yep. From memory. I don't know if he's in the squad. Manuel Lazzari, the midfielder from Spal. Mm-hmm. I think he's been really great this season. Do you think he'll... I reckon he could be worth, I don't know, 20 million maybe, end of the season. Do you reckon he'll leave Spal at the end of the season, especially if they get relegated?
Definitely, yes. If Spal are relegated. He's actually been linked. So Napoli have been linked in a double swoop for he and Lozano, 60 million double swoop, which would mean that, yes, 20 million is about spot on for the Spal man there. So certainly one to watch. I don't think he's in the Italy squad, Rick.
I'm just checking now. I don't think
check
he
it up.
Is
I don't think he's in. Even if he is, I don't think he'll feature. But certainly one to watch. And this young crop of Italian talent coming through the ranks, very exciting time. But I agree, Luke. They must be 6 points from six taking on Finland and Liechtenstein in coming days. You got that player?
He's not in the team. Yes, he is.
All right, he's in. He's in. There you go. So bright times ahead. There have been a couple of injuries though at Italy, which we'll bring you shortly when we preview that. But yeah, are you predicting two wins from two here, Luke? Surely.
No, I think they'll comfortably take on Finland 2-0. And I think it needs to be two wins, two clean sheets. And you mentioned Scotland earlier. Put them on the back foot. -3, no goals scored. So,
and especially off missing a World Cup.
100%. Yeah, 100%. Thanks so much for your time, Luke.
Thanks,
anytime.
Luke.
Thank you.
We'll speak soon. Bye-bye. Luke, they're giving us a call. 9944 9999 if you'd like to call at any point in time. Well, let's get into the previews for this weekend. And we might as well just pick up the Italian discussion and finish it off quickly, Rick, because two big games coming up for, reasons that have nothing to do with the opponent. It's all about Italy and Mancini here. They have had no luck whatsoever in recent games. They cannot score multiple goals in a game. I brought this up the other day when you said that their last 13 goals have been by 13 different goal scorers. They've scored multiple goals in a game once since the back end of 2017, which is a 2-1 against Saudi Arabia.
They've
been in woeful form. But all of a sudden, there is this air of optimism about the group. No Mario Balotelli, which I think is a massive shame, just given his recent goal scoring form. The opportunity really would have been there to score a couple of goals, maybe 2, 3, 4 goals in the next couple of games, given the fact that we are anticipating multiple goals against both Finland and Liechtenstein. But the reports are saying that after an unfortunate injury picked up by Chiesa, of course, a Fiorentina star who is linked to some top clubs in the summer, the starting trio up top will be Ciro Immobile again, who, continues to fail up top for Italy.
If only you could see me at the moment. I have my hand on my head and I'm face palming myself.
I can see that. Federico Bernardeschi to support him on one side, and on the other it would have been Chiesa, but it will be Moise Kean. So they're going young up top to Bernardeschi and Kean to support Immobile. But regardless of who takes the park, there are some really impressive youngsters coming through the ranks. And Okay, not to be for Balotelli, who is now no longer a youngster, but for whoever takes to the park, a massive opportunity to really assert themselves and grow in this new Italian national team under Mancini.
And this is all it's going to be about at the moment. Sure, qualification must occur, but I think this has to be a period of growth. And in these two matches, as Luke was alluding to a moment ago, 6 points have to be gotten.
And two clean sheets.
And two clean sheets. And I think even more crucially, as you've alluded to, multiple goals in both
matches. Rick. I'm talking three plus in both games, I feel is a must.
I think I'd be happy in all honesty with 2-0 wins.
I knew you were gonna say that. 2-0, typical Italian results.
But
I think they need to really put the foot down and score. They've got the attacking quality.
They do.
They've got the defensive experience. They need to play with freedom. You know what? Even if they concede, they need to play with attacking freedom. They need to just build that synergy and rapport up top.
Okay, let me put it to you in this way. Would you be happy if Italy were to win 4-1? They concede a goal, so you don't get your clean sheet, but at the other end, they happen to score something they haven't done in years.
You don't want Italy conceding against Finland or Liechtenstein.
But you get the multiple goals, the 3-plus that you've been alluding to.
Yeah, you do.
So you sort of get, are you happy with
Rick,
yeah,
Finland
six
haven't
of
scored
one
against
half a
Italy.
Another.
Finland haven't scored against Italy since 1977. Let's not see that change.
Look, I know that realistically Italy won't get conceded against Finland, but I'm putting it out there as a possibility. Is if Italy do happen to concede, would you be happy with a 2-1 win or would you be happier with a 4-1?
Rick, I think any Italian fan will only be happy with a convincing Italian display 90 minutes. The scoreline will take care of itself, but they just want to see improvement on the park. Look, there were some positive signs in their final match of 2018, if you can recall, against the United States. The scoreline was poor, 1-0. It was a very lackluster result, but there were signs of improvement. I think that's the only thing Italian fans want to see, are signs of improvement. They are unbeaten in their last four, a couple of Nations League games, a couple of friendlies. But again, the performances have been steadily growing. Two convincing displays here, an absolute must against two of the minnows of world football. Finland, of course, were in action in the Nations League, and Italy finished second in their group. Finland won their group, so different performances. But Finland, of course, were in League C. Italy were in League A. Finland winning their group in pretty convincing fashion. They lost their last two matches, but won their first four, and that was enough to see off Hungary, Greece, and Estonia. So when I say Finland are one of the weaker nations in this group, Greece are also in this group as well, and Finland beat them in League C qualification there in the UEFA Nations League. So this may be a little tougher than we anticipated.
Yeah, it starts to also give you a bit of an indication as to how this group may play out below Italy. Now, I will assume here that Italy are going to be the favourites to progress, so I'm going to sort of aside for a moment, but it starts to give you an indication as to how the remainder of this group will or could possibly work itself out.
Very interesting group with Greece, Armenia, Bosnia, the other three nations participating here. But for Italy up against Finland, big things are expected. Florenzi, of course, the Roma right back, has also been injured while on international duty. So a couple of players in Florenzi and Chiesa Chiesa certainly would have started. Florenzi was certainly an option for Mancini. They won't be in the lineup there, but one to keep an eye on, no doubt. Of course, Italy, one of those many nations, as we touched on, who have missed the World Cup, who are now starting plans for this new generation of their respective national team. The biggest match of the weekend, no doubt about it, and this one will be Monday morning, so I'm very excited. That's local time, of course, but very, very excited about reviewing this one on Monday. Netherlands, Germany. Now, the Dutch with that big win this morning over Belarus, 4-0. Germany with a 1-1 against Serbia day before last, actually 36 hours ago now. So all of a sudden, Germany with an extra day's rest, they go to the Netherlands where they lost 3-0 in October last year. A different look Germany side. Do they have any hope against this rampant Dutch outfit?
Well, I think you have to give them hope.
I don't. I give them no hope.
You have to.
I don't, Rick. I know Germany, but this is a different Germany side.
Like I sort of said when we reviewed Germany's game against Serbia yesterday and ended up being a 1-1 draw, the way that Germany were able to get in behind that Serbian defence time and time and time again, Virgil van Dijk and Matthias Delibin and Dumfries are going to be expecting a lot more of this over and over again. So it's not going to be an easy result in that respect. Conversely, at the other end, can you see the likes of De Roon, De Jong, Quincy Promes, Ryan Babel, Gini Wijnaldum, Memphis Depay. Can you see those sort of passes getting past this German defence, considering that a lot of that focus is going to be on that German defence? Not for me. So I give Germany a lot more of a hope of getting a result. Not saying all 3 points, but certainly getting one out of Amsterdam.
3-0 the last time these two sides met in the Netherlands. 2-2 the last time they met, which was the return meeting there. That was in Germany. So, look, I think that the Dutch will have too much attack power here and will take care of not a makeshift Germany side, but this new-look German outfit. And I don't think I saw enough from them against Serbia to indicate anything else. And if the Dutch can win, that'll be 6 points from six. And in this five-team group, points from two games, with the other best nation in Germany taken care of, they'll be cruising through to Euro 2020. But then again, they could also very well win the UEFA Nations League, which will help them get there as well. So the Dutch, I'm excited for their short-term future and, well, what it holds beyond that, we will see. But an exciting phase for Dutch football fans. The action gets underway tomorrow morning, though. Again, or it resumes. Bulgaria, Montenegro, Albania, Turkey, Andorra, Iceland. I'll tell you what, Iceland here, away to Andorra. Now, surely, but wasn't so long ago that Iceland and Andorra were at a similar level. Iceland, of course, have come on significantly after that incredible Euro 2016 run. Sensational run through qualification for World Cup 2018, where they topped a group with the eventual finalist Croatia, and then just were outclassed at World Cup level with Argentina, Nigeria, and Croatia once again. A disappointing World Cup for them. They only won one match in 2018. That was a friendly early on in the year. They haven't won a game for 12 months here, Rick. So they go to Andorra, clearly heavily favoured to win and very well
should
win. But look, if Croatia was pushed by Azerbaijan this morning, there's no reason why Iceland here might not be as straightforward as many are anticipating.
I was going to say, there'd be a few little asterisks placed against Iceland winning here. You've got to also think, when was the last time they scored more than one goal in that 12 months? It's a very long time ago.
They have struggled, and particularly in competitive fixtures. That's they right. have really, really struggled. In fact, just looking through, they didn't.
They didn't. So for me, if I have to sort of put on any form of betting hat on, this is going to be one of those matches where I think a plucky 1-0, maybe even a 2-0, might be enough to determine the factor.
Look, it is Andorra. Andorra are one of the weakest European nations, so they should be winning this Iceland. But you are right. No goals in competitive fixtures, no winning form. The matches that I refer to, there are actually two friendly wins. And I remember discussing this in the World Cup. And I remember in the World Cup, we both were confident that Iceland would underwhelm. And that they did, because those two friendly wins came in a doubleheader against Indonesia 3 days apart, 6-0 and 4-1. That's not
winning form.
That's not winning form at all. Their last win in a competitive match came against Kosovo in late 2017. It was the final round of qualification for the World Cup, and it was that win that secured them top spot. So that was a 2-0. They go away from home here. And look, I'm tipping they will win, and they'll win handsomely. But don't pen it in.
No.
Pencil it in. But look, they have met five times historically, the two nations. Iceland have won all five games without ever conceding a goal. 2-0, 3-0, 3-0, 4-0, 2-0. So I'm anticipating another win. But Andorra, maybe with an opportunity to spring a surprise. Of course, this group, they are with France, Turkey, Moldova, and Albania. France will go to Moldova this weekend, so Le Bleu, you'd expect, will
get the win.
We'll get a very handsome win in that match. But a big match for Iceland, particularly as them and Turkey, you feel, will fancy themselves to finish in the top two with the reigning World Cup winners. Other match tomorrow morning I'm looking forward to is England and the Czech Republic at Wembley. Now, England with a couple of injury headaches. They've had three or four players withdraw from the squad, but that's will hand an opportunity to a couple of new faces to come in. Of course, a lot of pressure on Harry Kane to step up and deliver. How do they continue their response after a stunning 2018 with their performance at the FIFA World Cup through to the semi-finals of the UEFA Nations League? Do they just carry on that good form? It feels that way. But as we said, on paper, still quite inexperienced, this three-line squad.
Still inexperienced, yes. But I think with the crest of form that they do have, I think they're just going to ride that wave all the way through. And I think this is going to be a similar sort of match in that respect. I think England might be able to sort of get the opening goal, and then press forward, and maybe try and get a second one. But ultimately, it was, in my eyes and the way I see it, it should be an England victory by the end of the final whistle being blown.
Haven't met since 2008, the two nations, 2-2 in a friendly, and that one was in England. So a long time since the two sides met. Czech Republic, of course, a very different nation. They were a semi-powerhouse in the 2000s, the Czechs. They were very talented, and you just feel maybe starting to build again. Some positive results of late. In the Nations League, they were in that group, of course, with the Ukraine, who won the group. Slovakia were relegated. Czechs finished in second, so they remain a League B team in that competition. But look, I think England will win. I don't think it'll be overly convincing, but I think that Kane and England will be a little too strong.
Have you seen the record of England at Wembley?
It's near perfect.
Near perfect. Yep. 15 wins, one loss.
Yeah. Again, they play, they're very tough to beat at home. I think England may have a couple of issues on their travels in this group. We know they've faced Montenegro before in the past. Montenegro, a nation, a relatively new nation, they're continually building. But with trips in, this is a tough group. England will win the group, in my opinion, but Czech Republic, Montenegro, Bulgaria, and that fairy tale story in Kosovo, tough to predict who will join England. That's, hypothetically speaking, England win the group, but I think they will, but all of those trips will be very difficult. So England, in my opinion, will not win 8 from 8 in this group, as they've been close to doing in recent qualification campaigns. So England, Czech Republic, must win for England. They must bank all four at home, and we're anticipating, based on that record,
correct,
they'll have no issues in doing exactly that. Other matches tomorrow morning, Luxembourg, Lithuania, Portugal, Ukraine will be an interesting one. Ronaldo, of course, returning for the first time since the FIFA World Cup.
Ukraine on that form that they've showed during the UEFA Nations League.
That's right. They won that group, as we just said, with the Czechs and Slovakia. They did lose their final match to Slovakia 4-1, but that was a dead rubber.
They were already through, yeah.
They were already through. That was their first loss in a long, long while.
Something like 12 matches, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. And it was their only defeat of 2018. And it was a game that essentially meant nothing. Look, I think that this will be tough, but I think the return of Ronaldo, with the return of Ronaldo with the other players that have come on in the absence of Ronaldo,
it's a big boost, isn't it?
Massive boost. They won the UEFA Nations League group with Italy and Poland. Portugal will be tough, but I think we'll get the win here against Ukraine.
Yep, 100% agree.
Georgia will host Switzerland. I think Switzerland, if you put your betting hat on, Rick, Switzerland,
there it is,
who were near perfect in World Cup qualification, 9 wins from 10, lost on the final day to Portugal 2-0. They go to Georgia here, one of the minnows of the group. And
how many?
Well, that's not what the bookmakers are saying. There's
good, no, I know.
There's good value around for Switzerland there. So I think Switzerland will be too strong. Looking into the rest of the weekend's games, the Republic of Ireland will go away to Gibraltar. Gibraltar has sprung a few surprises in the Nations League. I think the Republic of Ireland will be a class or two above, but who knows? They will be on cloud nine. Look, they've had a couple of really nice. The fact that they beat Armenia, that was a great result in the Nations League, and they had some really great performances there. And they will now take confidence into a match against the Republic of Ireland, who, look, they have no right in beating at this point of their development, but Republic of Ireland will need to ensure that they're on their game, because if not, away from home, who knows what will happen there. Malta will host the Faroe Islands. Sweden and Romania will do battle. Bosnia and Armenia will meet in that group, same group with Italy and Finland. The other match will be Liechtenstein hosting Greece. So a tricky trip there for the Greeks. Looking forward to Spain, Norway, of course. Another national team that are undergoing some change. It's felt the way for the large part of 4 or 5 years now for Spain, really since the 2014 World Cup, but really off the back of the 2018 World Cup now. It's a different look Spanish side. The quality is still there. The experience, not so much, though, for La Roja.
And that's been always the issue with Spain ever since the 2014 World Cup. It's been, have they got enough players coming through with enough matches and enough experience to replace some of those elder statesmen that have been around for so, so many years? And now we've started having to now see it come through and really take the reins and full control of La Roja.
This will be, obviously, look, this will be a big test for them, obviously losing their last two competitive fixtures.
It was a fall from grace in that UEFA Nations League, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Well,
they were in the box seat to go through, and then they
Rick,
pretty
when
much
when you win a game 6-0 in a three-team group, you're normally anticipating you'll go through. That wasn't the case when you lose your final two matches 3-2. So it was a bit of a fall from grace for them there. But They started well. They fell away. They come up against the Norwegian side who obviously, well, Norway did spring a surprise back in 2000 in a match against them. That was actually at the European Championships, 1-0. I don't think a repeat of that will be on the cards here.
20 years ago, I don't think it'll happen.
Spain favoured to win. We'll see how they get on. And closing out the weekend's action, of course, full recap of all these matches Monday here on the program. But Kazakhstan will look to make a 2-from-2.
Can they do it?
Against Russia. Well, Russia will be without Golovin. Why not?
I won't rule it out. You'd say it'd be more unlikely that Kazakhstan will be able to do it. But anything is possible.
Wales, Slovakia. Wales will be in action for the first time. Croatia will look to make a 2-from-2 away to Hungary. Israel, Austria, San Marino, Scotland, Cyprus, Belgium, Northern Ireland, Belarus, Poland, Latvia, Slovenia up against Macedonia. There's a whole host of African Cup of Nations qualifiers over the weekend as well. It's the final round of qualification. We'll bring you all the confirmed finalists for that competition on Monday on the program. And there are some friendly matches as well this weekend. Starting tonight, South Korea and Bolivia. Tomorrow morning, Argentina will welcome back Lionel Messi as they play host to Venezuela, Peru and Paraguay, Guatemala, Costa Rica, Mexico, Chile and Brazil to take on Panama. That Argentina match against Venezuela to be played at the Wanda Metropolitano in Madrid. So Messi will go to Madrid to return for Argentina. Looking forward to that. Of course, a couple of key players still out of that squad, but well, I guess it's the final chapter of the story of Lionel Messi and Argentina. Is he likely to make it to the 26th World Cup? Well, maybe.
He'll be 31. He's 31 now. If he goes to 26, he'd be
38.
38, 39.
Look, certainly in his absolute prime, I think this is the beginning of the final chapter of Lionel Messi and Argentina in his absolute prime. It's the 2019 Copa America in Brazil, and then it's, of course, looking further ahead to the 2022 World Cup in Qatar. And this is the start. This game right here, Argentina will have a big win. He'll be on fire. They'll get a good result. But this is really now, it's all or nothing. If Messi wants to have success at international level, it starts tomorrow morning against Venezuela.
100% agreed. That's why he's come back a few months out, re-acclimatise himself, re-energise himself with the national team, basically tell his teammates, you know what, I'm back. I'm here to win a trophy come the end of July.
Big match, that one kicking off at 7 a.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Time tomorrow morning. And obviously have had great success over Venezuela historically, but the last two, which were both World Cup qualifiers for the 2018 World Cup, ended all square. All right, all the recap and results of those matches and more on Monday. And then we'll start to look ahead, of course, to another big weekend of club action next weekend, but it's a full week to come of international football. But for now, for myself, Adriano Del Monte and Rick Dundrea, this has been Afternoons here on FNR Football Nation Radio, your voice of football in Australia and right around the world. Until next time, it's goodbye for now.
You're listening to Afternoons on FNR, Football Nation Radio with Adriano Del Monte and Rick Dundrea.